Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Off, like, our mum, that was all we ever got, that carriage. I live in Carlisle in England, but I'm from Dublin. But I've been there since I was 3 now, so...
You'd wish you could go back in time, because then you might could do something different, but there's not really anything you could do different to change it. Because you're only a child, so what can you do? Because people don't listen.
This is Maria McRae. She is 22 years old.
My name's Maria McRae. And my first memories will be living with my dad. I can't remember. I don't really remember much about that. And then my next memories will be...
Maria never really knew her mother.
...with my foster parents when I was in foster care.
What were they like?
Not very nice. No.
Her mother left Maria and her sister and returned to Dublin, where she took up with a man called Paddy Talbot. She was pregnant then.
When you were grown up, were you told about your brothers and sisters?
Not really. Nobody ever really explained. I used to ask because I understood, because I can't remember.
Though Maria never met her mother, I knew her.
My mum, like a picture in my head, I couldn't remember. But I did remember, because I always used to say at, like, 3 or 4 years old, like, that's not my mum, I have another mum. And because I could remember in my head a little bit, and then I did still see my dad.
Back when I met her mother over 2 years ago, Maria was missing. Then she phoned me last September. This is some of her story.
As well, and so I did used to ask quite a bit, because you're supposed to have reviews. I never did have reviews, and instead of doing a proper review, they just used to send out, like, it was like a questionnaire thing, like a book. Like, it used to say, like, what do you want to happen or what do you want now? And I always used to ask, put on it where, like, my family was. Because I was always asking for pictures or, like, where my brothers and sisters and my mum was. And I think the social worker managed to get that card off from my mum in there, and some pictures. And I don't think I could really sort understand in my head.
The story of how, using a postcard, she went looking for her family.
Like, the family, like where my family was or who my family was. So it was kind of as well to help that understanding to make the scrapbook. Off, like, our mum, that was all we ever got, that carriage.
Will you describe it to me?
That has, like, kites on it, and it's coloured, so it's, like, got lots of different colours on it. Kites and a few flowers on the front, and then how it reads is, "Are you having a good Sammy Marianne time?" She has it back to front, really, it should say, "Are you having a good time, Sammy Marianne? Love, Linda, Mummy, Paddy." So, like, she's put, like, her name and then Mummy's, that's, like, her. And then she's put my brothers and sisters under me in, like, age order. So from the oldest to the youngest. And then 3 kisses on the end. Somebody wasn't telling me the truth, because how can I have pictures here?
But they can't tell me where they are. But I could never understand why I could have pictures, but I couldn't see my family. So I could have pictures of them, but I was told, no, can't get a location on them. So it's, if you, even when you're younger, you understand if your brothers and sisters are in foster care as well, or your mum is asking where you are as well, in like, how, when social workers are communicating together, they can say to both sides, on in Dublin and here in Carlisle, no, we don't know where they are. But they obviously did, because I had like a letter that came with the card.
It's the story of how she found that family, and of what had happened in between,
like,
and what happened next.
Saying, I've enclosed some pictures of your siblings and a card from your mum. And I've got that all stuck in the book as well.
James Connolly Memorial Hospital, Blanchardstown, 19th of April, 1996. Dear Mary Ann and Sammy, I'm the social worker for your baby sister who lives in Dublin. She's also in foster care. She has three foster sisters and a foster brother. Her foster parents have also got a daughter of their own. She's a happy baby. Her brothers and sisters love to play with her. Thank you for your lovely photographs, calendars and letter. I divided the photographs into sets between your mum, sisters and brothers. Yesterday I met your mum to give her your presents. She was delighted with her gifts. I enclose a card from your mum to you. If you require further information, please do not hesitate to contact myself or my supervisor, psychiatric social worker, at the above address.
And that was it. That's all you got on all those years.
Yeah.
Was that one letter and the covering letter.
Yeah, and those pictures. But that off like our mum, that was all we ever got, that card. That's it. That's everything. Nothing else.
That card and the covering letter was sent in 1996 when Maria was 10. After that, silence.
I can't help it, you know. I can't help it.
Back then, 2 years ago, I made a programme about Maria's mother.
Wow, they can't help me. I have to see a specialist for that.
She was never named in my programme. Mary X, a partial life.
Have a nightmares. Maybe they could give you a light sleeping tablet to help you sleep.
Anybody.
We'll speak.
We'll speak to the nurse when we go back.
Because that's what.
I just don't tell anybody about.
No.
This is what I said back then. She's the mother of 9 children. Some of those children are still minors. Naming this woman might identify those children. That's the legal position.
I can't help it.
But you don't like to
help them.
It's just still on my mind.
A lot of things have changed since that programme was made, but the law hasn't.
I'll say to the nurse when I go back that you're having nightmares.
Maria's mother had an intellectual disability. She was then a voluntary patient in St. Eta's in Port Rann.
My family's around me and I'm in their house.
Yeah.
I get over quicker. Save if I'm in.
The programme was about her family's search for more suitable accommodation for her. But it was as much about how our system had failed her 9 children, who were all in care.
And they're going back into me face, or I don't give a damn about my own kids.
Looking back, that was a frightening day in Port Rann. It was November, there was a fog, and a feeling of foreboding, leaving that woman surrounded by her fears and nightmares.
I like to be somewhere in St. Michael's, you know, so I understand a bit more, you know.
It should only take about another 3 or 4 months.
I can't help it, you know.
My name is Sandra and I come from a family of 10. We lived in Rathmines Flats. We grew up there and I have a sister who's mentally handicapped.
Back then, just over 2 years ago, Maria was struggling to find her family. She didn't know any of this.
Recognised that my sister was mentally handicapped, but she's very lovable, isn't she?
These are Maria's aunts back then in 2007.
They love her.
But unfortunately, my mother passed away, and somewhere along the line,
back then, they thought Maria was missing, and Maria didn't even know they existed.
After having 13 pregnancies, 9 children alive, 6 of them who are very severely handicapped, costing the state a fortune, yeah? And all those kids just thrown everywhere.
This is Maria's brother, Joe. His name is given as Joseph Talbot. All the files belonging to him are lost. He was born in 1988, 2 years after Maria.
Like, he can't dress himself, or he couldn't cook, or he can't wash himself. But really, it depends on me for everything. What do you want to show Peter? He wants a cappuccino. Hand him down to Donna. He loves coffee and he loves cappuccino. Do you want to close the press? And do you want to show Peter your tablets? Where's all your tablets? Yeah, go on. These are all Joseph's medication. By the way, he hates cigarettes. I wish I was like him. These are his Eplin, and they're 300 mils, and he's on 900 mils of Eplin in the morning, and he's on 900 mils of Eplin in the evening. These are Tegretol, and he's on 400 mils of those in the morning, and 400 mils again in the evening. And these are kind of behaviour tablet, Risperitol, and he's on one of those in the morning, and one of those in the evening. Joseph is inclined to get a lot of temperatures, and with the temperature state, inclined to bring on the epilepsy. And he's often when started off at one fit, and it could go into 14, 15 fits. I would have to lift him up. I live here on my own with a 15-year-old, my daughter, 14-year-old daughter, and 10-year-old daughter. And he is a tumwee, and you eventually have to get him up onto the bed.
My nephew came around to me early in the morning.
What age was
he? He was 8 or 9 at the time, and he was very upset. He couldn't wake his dad up. And I went around to the flat, and eventually the police came and they kicked in the door, and I had to identify the body as that was Patrick Talbot. But I couldn't believe the conditions of the flat, because I was upstairs and there was porn magazines everywhere, like, it was just abnormal, and they were visible, that children could see them. They were in the wardrobes, they were lying on the floor.
I went over to Donuts on the north side, and I took Joseph, and I took him home here. And I'll never forget it, because I had a chain around my neck, and he ripped the chain and the blouse off me. His nails were real long, and they were absolutely black. Now, I've never seen nails like it. His hair was down to his shoulders. He was walking with head lice. He was very undernourished. He lived on coke. I had to detox him off coke. And he was violently sick.
For about
3 weeks.
Black.
All just black vomit coming out of him was all the coke. And I couldn't have a bar of soap in my house, because he used to insert the bars of soap up his back passage. I used to have to hide the soap. But I really think, yeah, it was all hidden. Social workers hid everything. As my sister said, the files are missing. They've no files on these files.
Do you think that they did visit the house?
Oh, I definitely do. Your Danny told me
it was like a jigsaw puzzle back then. The eldest daughter was missing.
Just the last two.
And then we found out that the eldest daughter is out in Dunavon Road. She has severe...
She has learning disabilities as well, and she's autism and all different kinds of things. But we have been begging for years on where these children are, which is only natural, if you like. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. And the social workers, we had meetings with the social workers, one meeting on the 21st of May, where they promised they'd give up 2 weeks and they'd find the whereabouts of these children. Nothing happened. One day I just got so frustrated with them, because every time it was just, we will find out, we're looking into it, that I took out the phone book and I was nearly 8 or 9 hours ringing up different places. I felt like a fool ringing them up. Hello. And it was about 8 or 9 hours. And eventually, we found our eldest daughter.
Through the phone.
Through the phone book.
I phoned the Navan Road. And whoever answered the phone, I don't know, said, who's this? So I knew straight away, this has to be where she is. And he said, I'll give you her social worker's number. Her other brother.
Her eldest son was missing too.
He's 25. He was adopted.
We only found that out that he was actually adopted.
And you, do you know where he is?
No, we don't. But a social worker told Donat that he's doing very well.
Yeah, and he's very happy and he's in a very lovable family. And we're delighted to hear that he is doing well and he's in a very happy environment. But at the same time, we're also annoyed that his own mother didn't know that he was adopted and we never knew. Again, we feel it's just brushed under the carpet with the help of it. They just tell you what they want to tell you, basically. And I think they never would have told us where those children were. Never. Because for years, my mother was told that they were fostered together. They were fostered together in a family. They were doctors, the family that took them, and they knew each other as brother and sister, and they were very happily together. And she even had pictures of both of them.
And they told my mother that the people that were fostering the two children, that they were doctors, husband and wife, but they were doctors, and that they had a big loads of land and ponies and horses. And they brought pictures of the children up to my mother at that time. Yeah, so my mother was over the moon thinking, well, these two little children have, you know, a great future for them. And all the time they weren't, they were fostered out.
But all I ever had was just this.
Around the same time in Carlisle, Maria was using the letter she'd been sent when she was 10 to find her mother's social worker.
With those pictures and that letter. That letter is how I did phone him round. When I was like a bit older and like I was just finished my A level, so I'd be 18 or something. I just thought, well, she has to be out there somewhere. So I just went off that letter all day ringing, and I think I rang that place on the number in the letter and they said, no, she's not here, and they gave me another number. And I just kept going round and round in circles for the day. But then eventually I found where she was. Well, I got the number of her office. And then I think once I got the number of the office, it took me a while just to ring that because I was a bit shocked that I'd actually found where she worked.
Oh, was she shocked?
I think she was. Well, she must have been, but she still remembered everything quite clearly. Like, she... a lot about my mum and she knew about me and Sammy and stuff. So it was obviously still clear in her mind, like the case was still clear in her mind. I mean, she wasn't so clear on dates and stuff like that, but the general case she was clear on. She could remember everybody, you know.
She hadn't forgotten.
No.
That has another two children who we don't know nothing about.
We just know that they're in England.
All through this time, Maria's aunts were searching for her.
They're two girls, and I'd say one of them would be 21. And I'd say the other
reiterated
one would be about
19. To the social workers at family case conference after family case
and
conference.
Again, when I ask social workers about these two girls, they tell me they can't find out because they're in the UK, and the UK is very big.
And how did they end up in England?
Because, seemingly, the father of these children, he brought them to England.
But when you look yourself at the history of those children, the fathers aren't able to look after the children.
No, they're not. No. Yes.
So we're also worried about those two children in England. Are we going to have another horror story? Why was that man allowed to take that child out of this country? We know nothing about that man either.
Because he took her sister to England with him.
Mm.
And we don't know how long she was there. And we didn't even know she was there till she came back on the scene. As I said, I could see her every day for this week at your door. and you mightn't see her then for 6 months, and you're worried sick about her, you know. And I've expressed all this to all the social workers. Are you going to wait till there's a death?
She'd sent that letter before she had the meeting with my aunts, and then said, you know, she doesn't know where we were, but they sent this letter before that meeting, so how can you say you don't know where we are when you've sent us a letter with pictures, you know? It's quite shocking.
Yeah, and you were in the same place, you weren't being moved around or anything.
So she told you when you tracked her down that you had another brother and sister you didn't know anything about.
Yeah, and you don't really know what to say to that either, because it's frustrating enough that you've missed out on your brothers and sisters, all those brothers and sisters already, and then you find out you've got two more and you didn't even know they were there. And she was just saying a few things about my mum, and then kind of said it would be hard to get a location on her. But I think at that time, I think she possibly quite could have been in Port Moran, so they would have known where she was at that time. Because when I was little, I was told over and over again, we can't get a location on them. But I don't think at that point I was really ready. If I probably wouldn't have maybe wanted to meet her at that very then, but maybe just to have known a bit more and had the opportunity to send something over or something, but I just was met with another brick wall. We wouldn't be able to get a location on her. I mean, I was probably a little bit, I don't know, naive, because if I was older now, I probably would have said, well, you know, if it's hard to get a location on her, like, I don't care. She's like my mum and I want to meet her and I want to know where she is. But, and it was quite a lot, so I think I left it for a few months. Because just being able to find somebody that, like, can tell you even just a little bit about your mum after all them years is, like, quite a big thing. But when I spoke to her, she didn't tell me I had, like, you know, aunts and uncles and stuff, like, that would be, that would want to know where I was or anything. And so, it's difficult because you don't really understand, like, what's going on as well, so.
Come on, let Peter see your lovely bedroom, which we need a few beds.
And then there's Joe's story, the missing files.
He has a big ticker upstairs, haven't you, up in the bathroom? Do you want to run up and bring it down and show Peter? What do you want to do?
The HSE says that the files on Joseph and his brother from the crucial period of 97 until 2000 are missing.
I'm actually looking for Joseph's files, 7.
Joe has always been called Joseph Talbot, the son of Paddy Talbot, the man who died in that flat. As the HSE tells us, that's the name on the birth certificate. But Donald McRae has always said he's Joseph's father.
I mean, the scar on his chest is this length, you know, like the length of a fork.
Sandra had to ask his younger brother.
When Maria was 18, she applied for her own files under the English Freedom of Information Act. We learn a lot from them.
But Joe was left in that flat, and like that's disgraceful. And he has a big scar on his across his stomach, and he can't speak. But the social workers left him there, and they knew that he wasn't his dad, because in my files it quite clearly shows they knew that my dad was his dad. So they left him living with somebody that wasn't even his father.
The files show that Maria's mother returned to Dublin pregnant in the summer of 1988.
And where are you going to throw him?
Joseph Bonaventura McRae was born later that year.
Is Joseph your brother?
Yeah, he's like,
are you
like I don't. I would say half brother or sister, because to me they're all my children, and they're my brother and sister, no matter what. But Because Joe was left in the flat in the town.
Now you can go down and catch him.
Mad because
I think he might be hurt.
His father, Maria's father, Donald McCrae, continually expresses his concerns for the safety of his son in that apartment. He knew Paddy Talbot. He knew his own wife, Linda, couldn't
That's
cope.
That's a big chigger, Peter.
The English files detail regular contact and regular expression of concern by Carlisle Social Services. During this period, social workers had no access to the flat. There were concerns about hygiene and an Alsatian dog. Dublin said the mother must neglect the child or abuse it before action can be taken. Social workers still have no access to the flat. In March 89, when Joe is 4 months old, his mother disappears for 2 or 3 weeks. There is no intervention. Dublin believes she was in Carlisle. Carlisle is a small place and they are sceptical and worried. They've been told if she deserted the child, there would be an intervention. A nurse has access to North William Street and says the baby is gaining weight but is dirty. Insufficient grounds for removal. Carlisle asked to speak to the nurse. There is no record that this ever happened.
You leave them there. You let them sit down.
In Carlisle, the wheels come off for Donald McCrae. His daughters, Maria and Sammy, become wards of court and are fostered. Their cases are eventually deallocated. There is sporadic contact between Dublin and Carlisle into the early 1990s. Then nothing from North William Street until 1999, when Paddy Talbot dies. The files are by then lost, and Joseph McCrae, who can't speak for himself, becomes Joseph Talbot. These are the things we learn from Maria McCrae's files.
To drop it.
Joe's brother later makes disclosures about abuse in that flat. The Dublin social workers I've been able to track down from that time don't remember any of this or refuse to talk to me because they have, they say, a code of ethics and a commitment to their clients.
Down to Portland, aren't you? Are you going down to see your mammy? Huh? What's your mum's name? Are you going down to see her on Saturday?
We always thought Joe was Paddy Talbot, so we hadn't got a clue that he wasn't till Maria came home. She was saying, oh, I'm so excited to see me brother. And she went on a bit more about Joe than she did about anyone else. And we were saying, God, that's strange. And then when Maria said it, we all nearly collapsed, didn't
we? Yeah, we couldn't believe that they were just, had the same father.
Yeah.
Because for years we were told it was Paddy Talbot. That was the father.
Yeah.
And did you knew Joe was your brother?
Yeah, I knew he was my full brother.
Did you know that growing up?
Yeah, knew that growing up. I always knew about Joe. I think because of my dad, I knew about Joe because I knew growing up. And I think from when I had a few reviews at the social workers, because I used to ask as well, that I knew as well.
Did you know about Debbie and Donna and Sandra?
No, nothing.
It should be said at this stage that the social worker who Maria tracked down on the phone and the social worker allocated to finding her and her sister Sammy were both working for the same office.
And Daddy or Joe, and they'd say they're missing, we can't find them. And then a new social worker came on board and he came up and asked us, could we tell him out because he hadn't got access to any of Daddy's files. So basically we start like from fresh. When did his father die? Because he couldn't get access to the files. So we did Freedom of Information Act for her files, for the kids' files, and we just got to run around all the time, didn't we? Even just when we went to some places, they said, you're in the wrong place, go to this place, that place, just over and over again.
Just a circle all the time.
Yeah.
Passing one on to the other.
when I first met the two of you, yourselves, in what was it, 2006, I think, you believed Maria and Sammy were lost, were in England, but you didn't know where they were.
Oh, no. No, we hadn't got a clue where they were. We just knew they were in the UK. So if we met with social workers, I rang them, which we rang them loads of times, didn't we?
Yeah.
Probably sometimes 10 or 15 calls a day. They'd say, the UK is a big place. We'll try and find them. Things like that. We hadn't got a clue about Carlisle because it would have made things a lot easier if we did. Yet. To search, like. They just kept saying to try and find them. Any case conference that was held, we'd bring up about it.
The children in the UK.
And they'd give 2-week deadlines. You'll see them in the files yourself. We'll definitely have something in 2 weeks. And they'd keep saying, we're looking into it. We're going to get in touch with social services over there. And eventually we'll find them. But we got sick of asking the same questions because you just keep on getting told the same answers. We're looking into it. We'll get back to you. We'll ring you. Like, we didn't know what was that to happen to Maria and Sammy.
What do you think of when you look at those pictures?
You'd wish you could go back in time because then you might could do something different, but there's not really anything you could do different to change it. Because you're only a child, so what can you do? Because people don't listen. You sometimes just feel like that still because... Because you don't, they've got the power, so if there's nothing you can do, you just keep hitting a brick wall. It's hard to think, even when you're younger, there's pictures of my little sister and I can't see her, or nobody can tell me where she is. Because even though I've not, I still love them exactly the same. I don't love them any less because I've not grown up with them. Because you're more grateful that you know where they are.
Will you tell me about what happened in between the first time you phoned?
Well, because I was just quite young and I was just out of sixth form and I was just started university and I would. I think I was shocked I'd actually, found her. And, I don't know. I don't really know what I expected from her response either. And I was probably a little bit, naive. Because if I was older now, I probably would have said, if it's hard to get a location on her, I don't care. She's, my mum and I want to meet her and I want to know where she is. But because, it was quite a lot. So I think I left it for a few months. Just until, because just being able to find somebody that, can tell you even just a little bit about your mum after all them years is, quite a big thing. But when I spoke to her, she didn't tell me I had, aunts and uncles and stuff, that would be, that would want to know where I was or anything. And so it's difficult because you don't really understand, what's going on as well, so...
Did you stay in contact with her?
No, I spoke to her that time and then I decided that I didn't care, if it was hard to get a location on them. And so I tried to phone her back, but she was on leave. And then, so I tried to phone her back quite a few times over, a while. And then... when I left my number, eventually, and then when she phoned me back, it was to go to her funeral, not to meet her. So, yeah.
Can you tell me about that day?
She was lying in the... Because she was in the funeral parlour. And, it's not the best way you want to meet your mum, that wouldn't be how you'd expect you're going to meet somebody.
because on all of the pictures I have, she didn't look very well, like, on all of them, like, not like, what, like, I don't know, but, like, because when I seen her lying there, I just said she looked like an angel. That's what I thought she looked like. And then, like, because you just, it's too, I don't really know, because all the family were coming in, and you think that's my family, and I'm just stood here, and I don't know, and I'm at my mum's funeral, and, like, that's not how you'd want to meet her, so I wanted to stand outside rather than be inside. I don't know. So, because Joe was stood outside, and I knew it was Joseph, because, like, I knew it was Joe before anybody told me. I don't know how I knew, I just knew. And, like, it's like, because you think that's my brother, or, like, and it's hard to, like, just, like, you to look at somebody, it's like, it's not a stranger, but it is. I don't know how to explain it. It wouldn't be something you'd want to do all the time. And then when we were in the church the next day, and, like, they took the coffin past, and you just think, that's all I've ever had, that's it, gone. Like, you don't even get to say hello or anything.
Do you want to stop for a couple of minutes?
No, I can keep going.
And did they tell you that Maria was coming to the funeral?
No.
But I spoke to probably a year before the funeral, and she never mentioned on the phone then I had any aunts or uncles either. She just said that it would be hard to get a location on her because she doesn't, like, stay in one place or anything like that.
Yeah. If that was a year before, that was, she was in Portrane probably that time, wouldn't that be right?
She would have been.
She would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about the, when did you get to know about Sandra and Donna and Debbie?
At my mum's funeral. Flynn pointed everybody out to me. Except I pointed Joe out.
So you saw Marie at the funeral yourselves?
No.
You didn't?
We didn't know she was there.
We assumed to anybody that we didn't know were social workers. So I'm happy to have Maria was a social worker. But we actually didn't see her, didn't we?
No.
No. Sandra got a phone call and we were like, what? Shocked. Sandra rang us then and said, yeah, I can't believe it. Like, his daughter was at the funeral, and we were like, no way, we couldn't believe it, could we?
No.
And then we were thinking, would it have been? Sandra said, no, it was Mary Ann from Carlisle, and we were just stunned.
They wrote a letter and put some pictures in of my brothers and sisters and forwarded it to me, so, like that was how I got pictures of, like, my own brothers and sisters and stuff, and some of, like, my mum in there as well. And then I tried to phone my auntie Sandra, but she was away on her holidays. So, and then her voice was on the answer machine, so I kept phoning it just to listen, because you just think that's, like, your aunt. And I probably phoned my auntie Sandra because I knew that Joel lived with her rather than any of my other aunts. I don't know. So I kept just ringing it, putting it down and ringing it back over the next few days, just because. Just, you could hear. Like, because it's strange to be able to hear it, because then you think that's my aunt. I don't know. And then when I phoned her one time, and then she was back and she answered, I think I put it down. And then I phoned her again. You don't really know what to say.
So this is the story that 22-year-old Maria McRae began to tell me last September.
Well, you've been looking for somebody all that time, and then...
Of how she found her family, or what was left of it, and got to go to her mother's funeral.
And you start to think you're never going to find them, and then...
And of what happened next.
Because I can still remember, because she came running through the door, and she just, like, jumped up into my arms, like... And just to be able to give your little sister a cuddle, like, I don't know how to explain that. And then you look down, like, and she was asleep, and you just look down and think, I can't believe they're just there. Like, you know, because you've been looking for them for all the time. And, like, then they're just there. Like, I can't believe she's just there.
And that should be it, except it's not like that. Because the access Maria's been granted to her brother and sister is haphazard at best.
She said, it's good for the children, and we didn't know where you were.
For Maria to attend an access, she must leave Carlisle at 4 o'clock in the morning, drive to Newcastle, fly to Dublin, hang around until her access at 3 o'clock, which lasts for an hour and a half or two maybe. Go back to the airport, return to Newcastle and drive back to Carlisle again, in excess of 20 hours a day. The accesses don't always happen or can be cancelled at short notice. This is the aftermath of the February access, the first time she'd seen her little sister for 8 months. The airport was in chaos, snowbound and full of French rugby fans.
Normally she'd just come running up, but she did, so it was a bit hard because she's not seen me for 8 months. So she, like, wasn't her usual self. She was quieter and stuff. Whereas normally she'd be like, pleased to see me, it's my sister Maria from England. She wasn't like that today. It's like it doesn't feel natural, and it feels hard to just be yourself and hard to keep them entertained and interested in that when there's nothing in there. And then you feel under pressure because, like, everybody else is there. And then so that was like an hour and a quarter of seeing her with, like, everybody else there, and it's not really nice access. I don't like it. Like, nobody's said anything.
So you're feeling things have gone backwards?
Yep. I don't really want to go back now, after today.
I switched off the recorder. She was crying and couldn't go on. You must be very tired now.
A bit.
Nobody will say why this is happening, or why Joseph McRae is called Joseph Talbot.
You wonder why
or why he was left in the care of a man who wasn't his father, a man described by Dublin in the Carlisle files as mentally subnormal and of a very limited ability.
What the reason is.
Or why that flat in North William Street was never forcibly entered. Or where the Dublin files went. Or how a whole family can disappear as if into a black hole.
How can people do that with your family? Like, that's my mum. So how can people decide? Like, on what level does somebody decide? No, we're just going to tell you we don't know where she is. We can't. Because, like, how can somebody decide to take that decision away from you that you're not going to meet her? Like, or have a relationship with her when you're a child? Like, how can... Or your brothers and sisters, like, at what point does somebody make that decision for you? Like, because it's your decision. And then there's nothing you can do to put it right, because it's too late. Because she's gone, so you can't do anything to help. It's like, you can't take the memories away for people, and you can't take, like, speech problems or like what happened to her either. So you just think,
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.